And here we are on November 11, 2016, at the Essence Festival. And a philosophy of education particularly important today because of all the unrest happening in the country regarding education. We thought it might be a benefit to look back thousands of years at what do the ancient Vedic sacred writings say about a philosophy of education. And I'm hoping that this will provide some light and some direction to the people of South Africa to try to provide an education that will give people peace, that will give people harmony, and will give people the ability to make a good life for themselves. So what is the philosophy of education? It's a series of principles on which you base learning and teaching. Now, if you don't have a coherent philosophy of education, you simply teach piecemeal. You say, well, we'll teach a little this, we'll teach a little that, and you have this purpose for this and this purpose for that. But you may not end up with the holistic result in the students that you teach. Now, we have to say that in most institutions of learning in the world, they don't have a comprehensive, cohesive, articulated philosophy of education. Among those that do, they don't usually follow their philosophy, so it's not usually demonstrated in what happens in the schools. Often each teacher, each department has their own philosophy of education, which may be articulated or unarticulated. And therefore, although students may learn something of math or they may learn something of geography, they don't really learn how to be a complete holistic human being who contributes to their own inner peace and to the peace of society. So this particular research we did on philosophy of education is from an ancient book called the Yajurveda. Yajurveda is one of the four main books of knowledge from India, and it's from a section called the Isha Upanishad. Upanishad means to come closer, and Isha means to the supreme lord of all. So we're going to look at several aspects of this very ancient philosophy of education, and I hope what you'll find is that it's speaking not of a particular culture, but of universal principles. In this particular event at this Essence Festival, we're especially celebrating the original cultures of Africa and how their principles have relevance to us in 2016. What we'll find if we look at the ancient cultures before globalization and industrialization was that the vast majority of them embodied and understood essential universal principles displayed in a variety of form. It's certainly worthwhile to look at the variety of form. This particular kind of art, this particular kind of music, this particular kind of food, that's worthwhile and that's valuable because this is a world of diversity and variety. The creator and maintainer of this world is a great believer in variety. I'm not sure if these are real plants, but on a real plant, I don't think they are. On a real plant, every leaf on one plant is different, isn't it? Even on the same plant, there aren't two leaves the same. And there's such a variety of plants and trees, each of which have different shaped leaves. There are no two snowflakes the same. There's no two grains of sand the same. So the idea of variety and diversity on an individual level, on a cultural level, and on a regional level is one of the eternal, unchanging principles of reality. At the same time, underneath that variety and underneath that diversity, there's also a kind of sameness and harmony. Good is always good. We can recognize good regardless of the culture, regardless of the color, regardless of the language. We all know what is good and what is bad. And so looking at both of these things, the individual variety of how good is displayed throughout the world and what is that essential good are both valuable. What I'm going to be looking at today is what is that essential good as articulated in a different culture, but with principles that are applicable everywhere. So we're going to look at several categories. What should be the goal of education? How educated people will benefit society? How learners should be disciplined? How they learn? Who is a teacher? What are the teacher's attitude towards learning? How should we teach? And how should we tell whether or not teaching has been successful? So what should we achieve? What are the goals of education? I think a lot of times people think the goals of education is just to get a beautiful home and a fancy car and a flat screen TV in every room, right? And a dog. But we see that among the people who achieve these things, they're not universally happy. Isn't that a fact? If we take all the people in the world who've achieved all these things, I'm sure that we won't find that 90% of them are happy. So that's not really the goal of education. And if we put that forward as the goal of education, people get very frustrated when they can't achieve it. Yes? And there's a lot of propaganda that everyone in the world should be able to achieve that. I don't know if we'd be able to accomplish that or not. But even if we did, not everybody would be happy. Not everybody would be happy. So instead of setting people up to achieve something that externally not everybody's likely to achieve, we're not all likely to be billionaires with our own, you know, several mansions in different parts of the world and two Jaguars and BMWs in every garage. Instead of setting people up for that expectation, which, if they achieve it, will not even necessarily give them happiness, let's look for that which could give everybody happiness and satisfaction. So we're looking at this in four areas: in relationship to ourselves, to others, to the world, and to our Creator. In relationship to ourselves, the main goal of education would be to find ourselves, to understand ourselves. Now again, although we all have commonality, each of us is unique. We are unique on two levels. One is on the external level in terms of our talents and our abilities. My own spiritual teacher said that everyone has some extraordinary talent. Many people have two or three or four or five extraordinary talents. Education should be to unearth that extraordinary talent that is within everyone. No matter how that person is abled or whatever within the external categories of the world. To find that extraordinary talent and to be able to connect that extraordinary talent to doing some good for the world. What do they say? Where our greatest joy meets the world's greatest need. So that should be something that's a goal of education. Unfortunately, in modern education, we often have schools that simply resemble the factories that produced our modern school system. I'm not sure if you're aware, but modern education in most of the world came into being with the Industrial Revolution. And the people who created the format of modern schools were not educators, they were not psychologists, they were not sociologists. They were business people who had developed the factories. And they were looking for an efficient system to teach the people who had crowded into the big cities for industrialization. So they created a system of education which was not necessarily good for the individual, for the family, or for society. Our modern education systems generally do not find and bring out a person's individual talents. They simply tell everybody, everybody's got to turn to page 23 and put your finger on number 6 and find the right answer. And find the right answer in the right way, which is the way I tell you to do it, because I'm the only one who knows the right way. I already know the answer. Did you show how to do it in my way? No, well, that's no good. So our modern education system doesn't really bring out a person's individual talents. The other kind of self-awareness that we need to get is beyond this body and this mind. Beyond this body and this mind. While celebrating the wonderful and glorious differences we have on the physical and mental platform, we also are a unique person on the spiritual platform. And that uniqueness on the spiritual platform is our ultimate self and our ultimate self-expression. We all know intuitively that we are spiritual beings. After all, everybody of us here has some little tiny body, 2-year-old body, right? And you can't just say that that body got blown up like a balloon and is our today adult body. That body has changed very radically. In fact, all the cells in our bodies have changed. Our mentality has changed. But we retain a sense of continuing identity. That sense of continuing identity, that consciousness is our spiritual self, whether you want to call it a spirit or a soul or whatever terminology one wants to use. And that spiritual self is also a unique individual with a variety of talents and tastes and opinions and everything that is special to us. And education needs to awaken that also. It is on that level that all living beings are equal in value. It is on that level that all human beings and animals and plants, all living beings are equal in glory, that all living beings are equal in power with a variety of individual expression. And an education that doesn't awaken that real self and train that real self, not in any particular religion. Yes, I am a teacher, a priest in the Hare Krishna religion, but one of the reasons that I came to this religion was that my spiritual teacher says that truth is found in all the great traditions of the world. He was not a sectarian teacher. So it's not necessary, we're not talking about when we teach this religion or that religion, but to find one's actual self. Then one also has to know oneself in terms of being a member of the greater community of humanity. Where do I fit in? Where is my place? Where is my function? How can I best contribute to society? Because we don't want to just simply develop our own talents for our own personal pleasure and our own personal enjoyment. Like we see here, so many artists have come to share their talents with the world, not just keep them for themselves. As far as in relation to the world in general, education should teach people what's right, what's wrong, and what's liberating. Now you can say, well, each society has different ideas of what's right and what's wrong. There was an important sociological study some time ago saying that there's 5 universal moral principles. Purity is better than impurity. Authorities, leaders, guides, helpers should be given special respect. Life should be fair. We should be loyal to and help our community that helps us. And we should never harm anyone. I was just discussing with some people that we could say the definition of evil is to take delight in the pain of others, and even worse than that is to take delight in causing pain to others. So there are universal principles of what is good, and education should teach what is good, what is bad, and what is beyond good and bad, what is on the transcendent platform. Education should also teach respect for all forms of life. Not just respect, but actually love for all forms of life. On the spiritual level, we are all connected. This is a world of both diversity and connection. In Sanskrit, we call this achintya bheda bheda tattva. That means that we are simultaneously and inconceivably all one and all different. To celebrate our differences, to help people with their individual talents and to find their individuality, and at the same time understand our commonality, and to know that to disrespect anyone, to harm anyone, to think ill of anyone, to put down anyone, to gossip about anyone, to cause pain to any living being, is to hurt oneself. Because we are all connected. We are all part of the same universal body. If someone hurts my finger, I feel the pain. This should be taught in schools, not as a theory, not as a construct, not as a philosophy, but as a way of life and a practice. And then if education doesn't teach love of God, if education is so secular that it's not just neutral to various religions, but it actually abnegates all religions. If by secular we mean that the creator, the maintainer, is gone from our consciousness completely, that we look at the world and we do not see the hand of the supreme artist, either in our collective story or in our individual story, then our education is woefully incomplete. As a reaction to oppressive religions, to state-sponsored religions that tried to force a particular sectarian view on people, we've turned now to such an absolute secularism that ideas of God and the Creator are gone completely. We are not going to have a population that has real values and real morality. Now, the explanation from this is a little interesting. I think in most of the schools around the world, there's some education in values, morality, ethics, how to be a good person. Although we can have a lot more than we do. I think in most schools, they're just busy teaching skills, how to read, how to write, how to do your multiplication tables, and they don't spend very much time. Maybe they have a little class in morals, you know, a little class in values here and there. Okay, children, today we're going to talk about honesty. Something like that, right? And then the kids look at the people who are coming to positions of power in the world and who are anything less than honest and say, I don't know if to get ahead in life is really going to serve me to be an honest person. And so we find that despite teaching in values, despite teaching in character, that people are becoming more and more self-centered. That people's way of getting what they want is more and more through violence and destruction. I found it fascinating that to get free education, people will burn down a school. How are you going to get free education if you burn down the schools? Where are you going to get your education? Under a tree? What kind of education are you going to get under a tree? So why is it that in spite of all of our training in values, people resort more and more to violence, to cruelty, to insults, to underhanded techniques in order to get what they want? So to understand this point is a little delicate. So I think that most people in the world would say that they're good people. Most people would say, no, I'm not an evil person, I'm a good person. I'm an honest person. But we all know that even though we say we're honest people, we're not always honest, isn't it? There are times we're not honest. Now, if we think about what are the circumstances under which we give up our honesty, or we give up our kindness, or we give up our patience, or we give up our consideration, all these things on which we pride ourselves, when do we give them up? And we'll notice we give them up whenever we become fearful. Whenever we become fearful. As soon as we're afraid that if I'm honest, if I'm kind, if I'm considerate, if I'm fair, I'm going to lose something or not gain something that is really necessary for my survival, then that's just gone. Then we're ready to be mean and cruel and unfair and cheat. And we think, well, I don't want to do that, but it's necessary for my self-preservation. And what the ancient Vedic scriptures teach is that the material world is run according to three different moods. One is ignorance, where all one thinks about is oneself, something like an animal. One is passion, where one wants to be a big person in the world. And one is goodness, where one wants to live in harmony. The lower one is on these modes, the more fearful one is. And the faster one will give up one's so-called good qualities. If we want people to be really, truly people who have values, people who behave properly in society, we need to bring them to a level of fearlessness. We need to bring them to a level of inner peace. Fearlessness and inner peace cannot be had on the material platform because the material platform is very fearful. If I only identify with this body and this world, well, this body is subject to problems at every moment. We can be injured, we can be diseased, right? We can be attacked by somebody. Even my mind is subject to decay and disturbance and fever and so forth, forgetfulness. My friends and family may not be there when I need them. My government may not be there when I need it. If we identify only with this world, we will be filled with fear. So unless our education trains people to identify also with the world of the spiritual, with the world of the Creator, they will not find the inner peace that will allow them to be externally peaceful and externally kind and allow people to keep their good character even under the strongest provocation. It's very easy to fast if you've just eaten a full meal, but it's not easy to fast if you haven't eaten for a day. It's easy to be patient and kind when everything's going nice in our life. The real test is when we feel threatened. And that is not a question of repression. It is a question of connecting students, connecting learners to their spiritual nature and to the one God of everybody, of all faiths, of all cultures, of all countries in the world. And in a non-sectarian, in a religiously neutral way, if our education system doesn't do this, then we will find that despite people learning their multiplication tables, and despite their learning history, and despite their learning literature, it doesn't matter which country's literature they're studying or which language they're studying, we will not have the kind of society that we desire. Truly educated people will serve society through service, through doing political, social, communal, and altruistic activities that are dovetailed or in harmony with the Creator and with their spiritual nature. By having a mood of nonviolence, and violence should only be used when absolutely necessary to curb down others' violence. Otherwise, we should live in a world of do no harm. By their character, one in a proper education is satisfied with what they can achieve honestly, and to be in harmony with the environment. If one has peace within, one will not only not become disturbed easily at difficult times, one will also want to live in harmony with the environment. One will find great satisfaction in learning in harmony with the environment. In the ancient Vedas, we learn that all living beings are at their core all good. That as spiritual beings, we are part of our Creator, we are part of the Lord, and as part of Him, we are all good. Therefore, education is to bring out that inherent goodness, that inherent perfection that is in everyone. At the same time, having taken our birth in this world, especially at the present time in human history, with so much discord and war and difficulty, we also develop improper habits of mind, improper habits of action. And education needs to teach us not how to repress those, but how to progress to goodness in our external life. The Ayurveda also tells us how people learn. And I really like the four-point progression, that one should receive learning either through hearing from someone who knows or by direct experience. And then one should have the time and the space to reflect on that learning. I think in our modern educational system, often you learn something and then you go on to something else and you go on to something else and you go on to something else, and you never really have the time to reflect on it and to assimilate it. Then to really deeply apply what you've learned. Many times the way that we assess learning is simply through a paper and pencil exam or a computer-generated exam that doesn't test whether or not you've been able to use your learning in the world. So you may be able to get a top grade in advanced mathematics, but you can't even get a mortgage on a house. You don't even know how to balance your checkbook. So is your learning actually being applied? And then, depending on the mercy of the Lord, through prayer and submission, for full wisdom for one's understanding. So to be able to learn either through experience or by hearing, to reflect on what one's learned, to deeply understand it, to be able to put it into action, and to pray and connect so that one gets real wisdom. Now, in order to have an education system like this, we would have to have teachers who are qualified in ways that we don't think of today. Today, we mostly look at teachers' qualifications in terms of, do you know the skill areas that you're going to teach? How to read, how to write, how to do mathematics, how to find your sitting on a map? And do you know the pedagogy of teaching? Do you know how to have a discussions? Do you know how to do a role play? Do you know when to do which? Do you know how to ask the right kind of questions? Do you have good delivery skills? Can you write on a chalkboard? You know, these are the kind of things that are taught to teachers. But Teachers' qualifications go beyond that. They also need good powers of discrimination. They need to be able to tell, all right, is this student able for something else? Or does this student need some more time? Is this student really being engaged according to their ability? What is this student's talent that I can bring out? They need to encourage the students to make autonomous and thoughtful choices. They need to be able to teach to people's developmental stages. Frankly, to institute a system like this, we would have to go back to the root and look at how industrialization and the mechanization and the objectification of people and society has destroyed the way that we are training people. It's put us all into these little boxes where everybody is supposed to do the same thing at the same time in the same way. If we really want to change education in this country and anywhere, we need a system that's going to be individualized, where the teachers really know how to relate to each learner on an individual platform. The teachers should have high expectations and be able to assess the students not only to some absolute standard, but also according to their own effort and their own progression. This philosophy of education is based on the concept that we can have occupations and livelihoods for people in society which don't require that everybody has to get an undergraduate degree or everybody has to get a master's degree. People should be able to find satisfying, fulfilling, financially successful occupations according to their talents in a harmonious way that don't require you to be in education until you're 25 years old, just filling in little boxes on an exam sheet. So this means not just saying, let's take the defective education system we have now and make it free. Okay, that's a great step, if you can do it, because our modern defective education system is very expensive to run. But why not have a different kind of education system altogether? Why not have an education system that's in harmony with the fact that we're all one in life, in power, in beauty, and yet we're all as different as the many leaves on the same tree? So thank you very much. We have some time for questions and discussion. We have about 15 minutes.
I would like your name. I would like your name and details. Are you in Durban?
I'm in Durban just until Wednesday. Since my name is Dr. Edith Best, and I've also taken initiation from a guru, and my spiritual name is Urmila Devi Dasi. Since I retired from active teaching in about 2001, I've been traveling. I used to run a school. For 27 years, I was a teacher of children and teenagers. So I traveled the world teaching about spiritual knowledge and about education. I work as a professor also in Europe. Write books, publish books, arrange for translations of books. So I'm just in Durban for a few more days. I'll be giving some seminars at the local ISKCON center here in Durban.
Will you be here tomorrow?
I don't think so, because I have two lengthy seminars at the ISKCON center. So I'm sorry that I can only be here today. I'd be happy to give you my notes. I do have online. If you go to my website, urmiladevidasi.org, I have a lot of materials for free download. So many materials for free download, it would take you months to read all of it. And I also have some links to some books that are for purchase. Yes? Both. So I started two private schools, and I ran them according to the principles that I'm talking about. It was individualized education, starting from age 5 through 18. But I also was an assistant principal in a government school, 450 kids.
So,
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, some of them have started schools of their own. And many of them, not all of them, of course, but I'd say the vast majority of them are the kind of people that you look at and say, yes, that's what we want. Now, they have to get at least 99% of the credit for that. The right kind of education system is really just providing an environment and a nurture for that to come out. It's not stifling it. Our modern education system, I'm really sorry to say this, but it just, it takes people and goes, yes?
My name is Seymour. Mine is a friendship, but it's not like a comment. I would like to say the thanks for the message that you just shared with us. Like today, I'm looking at the education, very much different from what has been perceived. And my take or my perspective, I wish we could take some of the messages that you've just given us and put them into the billboards. Because
do it.
In this world, there's so much information, there's so many aspects about food and whole other things, lifestyles, but your message was so simple when you are saying that education has to do with the peace.
Yes.
Thank you very much, man. I wish nothing more than what you wish for.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Do your part, whatever it can be, you know? Hello. I can hear you, but everybody else should be able to hear you too.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you so much. It's very important to notice. And having had my mom.
Oh, wow. Yes.
So on one end of the spectrum, I think this at the center of this is about the university of nature. And
that's right.
And you all do what? So it's a hierarchy situation where we're living in the country.
Yes.
So on that side of the example, burning down those buildings, the libraries, the houses, from that perspective. Then on the other end of the spectrum, we'll speak about
yes, that's right.
So you teach your students about both principles and how that's connected to education. So if you've got some principles around the country and a simple education system,
yes.
Right, that means you're going to have to take a task for us so you're going to run that.
Correct.
And if you speak about the kind of stuff, you switch consciousness as we run our minds, right? And look at what's happening with the students right now. Are the students
yes. Yes. Yes.
So that's, I guess, my comment and question to you. Please, this situation for the market about the role of the spirit, the role of both principles, and how they manifest themselves into the type of people and communities that we are seeing now.
Well, that's why really you have to have a systemic change. If you just try to do one thing, you say, all right, we're going to figure out how they do it in Germany, and we're going to give free university education to everybody. Which would be pretty hard, frankly, to copy-paste Germany onto South Africa anyway. Having spent time in both countries. But even if you could figure out how to do that, that doesn't mean you're going to solve your basic problem. The basic problem is systemic. And therefore, you have to go back to the system and make a system-wide change. And say, oh, okay, what is our roots here? Do we have to keep perpetuating the violence of colonization and the violence of industrialization and the exploitation? Do we have to keep repeating this over and over and over again so that the exploited want to become the exploiters and everybody is to be vying for who's going to exploit whom and who's going to be, you know, this is, it's not going to solve our problem. it may seem in the short run for an individual that it's going to solve their problem, but for the whole social body, it just makes things worse. So I see we need a return. We need a return to a different kind of vision of reality. Again, it's a real shame that because of the excesses of having certain religions in power, that now we've turned to such a secular society that you can't mention God and religion anywhere. It's like become a bad word. Bring it back. Bring it back as a universal principle, and teach people how to find inner peace. There is a movement going on in a lot of the world toward teaching, say, meditation in schools. I see that as a very, very positive thing. A very positive thing. This is the place we need to go. And we need to look at you can't look at something in isolation. You need to look at what are we advertising? What is the media putting forward as the ideal life? The media is putting forward the ideal life is you live in a big mansion, wearing all the clothes down there on the fashion show, and that's your ideal life. Whereas we all know that the majority of people living that life are not peaceful or happy or satisfied. So why in the world are we putting that up as the ideal? Why don't we start putting up as the ideal people who are actually peaceful and happy and satisfied? And then it's again working on the level of career and livelihood. So that it's not that the only careers that are available are such that need a high degree of technical education. So it really is systemic. And then the students coming out of the schools, yes, they're reflecting the consciousness, the mentality that's going on in the country as a whole. We really need, Mandela was a beacon for the world. We really need visionary leaders in the world. Not just one that comes and goes. We need a succession of visionary leaders who can bring people back to the proper consciousness. That's what we need. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to be the leader in the government. Everybody can do their part. What do they say? If you ever think that an individual is insignificant, try sleeping with a mosquito. Right? Each of us has power. Actually, every soul has equal power. Each of us has power. Each of us has glory. We have a lot more power than we think to make these kind of changes. We're not just dependent on the people with the titles in the positions. And a lot of the people who made some of the greatest changes in the world, like say Gandhi, he didn't have a title or a position. We're gonna look at some of the people who really made significant changes in the consciousness of the world. Okay, anything else? We have time maybe for one more. Yes. That's right, that's right.
So if that's not true,
oh, thank you for asking that question. Yes. I would refer you to one ancient wisdom book called the Bhagavad Gita, where there's a list of many ways in which one can come to what's called this mode of goodness. So meditation is one way, but there's other ways. One way is by being very giving and very charitable. Training children from the beginning that whatever they get, they should try to share and they should try to give. I once visited a classroom where there was one of the students there. Whenever he saw another child having a problem, he would jump out of his seat and go to help them. And the teacher thought this was bad behavior. And the teacher called the parents in for a conference. We've got to stop this child from jumping up and helping the other students. And I said, why don't you just train him how to do it in a way that's not disruptive? So to train giving, sharing our gifts, our talents, our knowledge, our time, that giving is getting. Giving is getting. If we will become rich by giving. We're not actually going to become rich by exploiting. We become rich by giving. And this is a way to raise people to goodness. Another way is through food that we serve. What food we're eating also affects our consciousness and our mentality. We should eat food that's not a product of violence. We should eat food that's healthy, that's in harmony with the earth. So this is another a big way to bring people to a higher mode. So there's actually a whole list of ways. I think I have to end now. I'm sorry. I think my time is up. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Kennedy. Please give a round of applause. As much as time is up, it's up on stage, but we can still engage in conversation.